We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome in, everybody, to the RotoWire NFL podcast brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined, as always, by Mario Puig. We got a week two preview coming up. We're going to run through the entire slate of games here, breaking it down from a fantasy perspective, some betting, a little bit of Survivor maybe mixed in there, all that good stuff after what was a pretty crazy week one. Some confirmation bias was had, and also some assumptions that we were making were shattered completely. And so we're going to try to sift through all of it. Mario, how are you doing on this fine Thursday?
I'm doing okay. The fire alarm in my building keeps going off for no reason. And I'm getting really angry about that because it's upsetting my dog. And I'll get violent over my dog. So that these building managers better fix whatever it is that's wrong. I got podcasts that I got to focus on.
That's right. I mean, we can't have Dulce out there being upset by these fire alarms. And that's some BS.
Landlord bad, in my opinion.
Nuts to them. Anywho, but moving on, we'll get to some football here. We'll do a little bit of the Thursday night game and then we'll just kind of run through the rest of the week two slate. So let's kick things off. We do have the football team going up against the Giants. This is kind of a must win for both of these teams, given how week one shook out for each. We got a divisional game here, of course. Starting 0-2 with an 0-1 division record would really put one of these teams behind the eight ball. So an early season, very important game shaping up here. Football team, 3-point favorites in this one, playing at home. At FedEx Field, where they had the sewage pipe burst last week, which was very funny, very emblematic of the franchise in that stadium. Anywho,
they're always surprising you. Like you think like they're not going to have the literal sewage spew all over their fans this week, will they? Like no, Dan wouldn't do that. Don't be unfair to Dan. And then this is what you get for going to the games buying a ticket.
Yep.
Anyway,
100%.
It's pretty crazy, but even after throwing spewing actual sewage contents on their own fans at a home game, I think Washington football team is in a pretty good spot 5 days later here against the Giants. I don't know what to make the Ryan Fitzpatrick injury. I was not a huge fan of him in the first place, so I'm not really worried about Taylor Heinicke. I don't know if it really changes anything. I don't have an opinion on it. So as long as it doesn't constitute a downgrade, though, you just have to worry about that Giants offensive line against this Washington front five. Ioannidis off the bench is a real problem. He's like a 10 sack kind of defensive tackle coming off the bench. We haven't seen that Giants OL hold up very well to this point. Von Miller looking pretty good last week, which he'll do, but it's just like these guys can definitely look that good too.
Right, exactly. So you have that, and then you have Daniel Jones's turnover problems that still very much exist. What did you make of the Giants' kind of new look receiving core or rotation last week? Anything to glean from there fantasy-wise after 1 week?
Well, it was a pretty encouraging game for Sterling Shepard, especially, and he probably had some pretty tough matchups, like the Denver corner rotation is four deep with quality starter level players. So Shepard showing up there was pretty impressive. He's always been a really good player, and it's not exactly surprising to see him do well. It was just that had to be his best game in a while, and it was against such a tough defense. So maybe Daniel Jones is going to hold up okay as long as these three receivers, Slayton, Sterling Shepard, Kenny Golladay, are out there. I think that's a really good three receiver rotation, a starting loadout that's pretty tough for any defense. And Kadarius Toney, five snaps, got two, you know, fake targets on
right,
those plays.
Right away, and then
exactly
disappeared.
Exactly what your worst fear with this guy would have looked like. And he's not like toast or anything. It's fine. And we know he missed a bunch of time in training camp. And Joe Judge, who is probably not very cool, has Toney in his doghouse. So that might eventually be kind of like a that'll look good for Toney to have been on the wrong side of such a turdly coach, but we'll see how it turns out. In the meantime, there's no playing time for him though, and Slayton is good. There's no reason to take that guy off the field like a lot of people reasonably assumed when the Giants took him and took Toney in the first round.
Yeah, that was the assumption that I was going under. I wasn't the biggest Toney guy in draft season, but you know, upon him getting that first round selection by the Giants, it's like, okay, well, Slayton didn't really do a ton in 2020. Maybe this is a sign they're going to shake things up and, you know, put Toney in the slot, maybe just kind of do what he does best as far as just like getting the ball in his hands, letting him be explosive that way. And obviously that they manufactured some early touches and then he just kind of disappeared from the rest of the game plan. One last thing to note here, thoughts on Saquon coming into this one.
It's hard to feel great about it. I mean, I don't want to bet against someone with his talent level ever, really, but the short week, not looking that great the first time around. So I don't want to tell anyone to bench him exactly, but if they kind of have a better option or they think they have a better option and there's a reasonably sound basis for that, I don't want to tell them they must start him, especially on the short week here. And what probably isn't a great matchup. I don't know how good the Washington run defense is. It wasn't great or anything against the Chargers, but the offensive line might be bad enough that just that front four kind of wipes out, you know, the foundation of a lot of their plays.
Yeah, definitely a concern here. You know, if you invested, like I feel like Barkley, you didn't have to spend the number two, number three overall pick to get him this year. But I mean, you're still potentially looking at two dud weeks from a top 10 pick here. So that there's definite reason for concern there. Let's get on over to the Sunday games. Leading things off, we got Bills, Dolphins. Dolphins, 3.5 point home underdogs in this one, despite being 1-0. And the Bills, I would say, relative to expectations, maybe fell on their face the hardest in week one.
Yeah, I guess I would say the Titans were the most like,
oh, that outright. Was,
yeah, yeah, the Titans were probably the most like outright embarrassed, but Buffalo, it was a little bit, you know, more particular of a sort of disappointment, because it wasn't like anyone looked at the Steelers and thought like, oh, these guys are pushovers, their defense sucks, there's no way the Bills lose. It was more like, if Josh Allen and the Bills are going to take that next step from being, you know, merely good to like great playoff level competitors, then playing at home against an otherwise tough team is still an environment where you're like, you got to win this one. And you know, be what you showed glimpses of last year and in this venue can show will continue into the future and like really, you know, solidify your status among the league's best. And in that frame, it was definitely disappointing because you got to give credit to the Steelers defense. I mean, Mike Tomlin's one of the best coaches in the league and he always has them prepared to play at a certain level. They're just a certain level that defense never falls below. They're well coached. They have a certain blueprint that they execute well. But fact is, too, the Bills just kind of got beat by them. Like, they didn't really get anything going consistently all game. It wasn't even that Josh Allen was playing bad or anything. It just couldn't – they just kept getting, like, outplayed. And unlike last year, Brian Daboll couldn't think of any adjustments after the first two quarters went so poorly. So, on the one hand, this is not exactly, like, a fun setup for the Bills to go on the road to the Dolphins, another tough team, another tough defense. But – two games in a row for Allen to underproduce like that seems kind of, I don't want to say it's like impossible, but it just seems unlikely. And for whatever it's worth, you know, he did struggle against the Steelers last year, struggled against them last week, of course, but he had the really big game. Maybe his best game was against the Dolphins last year. So maybe there's something a little easier about the Dolphins scheme for Josh Allen to decipher than the Steelers, and hopefully he can get back on track here. If he doesn't, it's pretty concerning.
No, absolutely. So we'll have to see what he and Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, Emmanuel Sanders are able to do. Zach Moss, one of the big surprise healthy inactives on Sunday. Do we think that this is a trend that's going to continue? What do we do with him?
I have no idea. I mean, I wouldn't cut him yet if you drafted him, just unless you were picking up Elijah Mitchell, I guess, or somebody who's really worth it. This to me was a pretty strange and concerning sign. I like Matt Breida enough, but to think Devin Singletary is better than Zach Moss is basically to be confused. Like, there's nothing that Devin Singletary does as well as Moss. Moss does plenty of things better than him. Like, at best, this looks like a case of a team doing that thing where they're like, oh, you didn't have a good enough week practicing. We're going to make you earn it. You got to earn your place in the game plan, that kind of thing, rather than the question of, like, who's actually our best running back. Devin Singletary can give you some, you know, high motor yardage off the bench. But if you put that guy into an extended role, he's going to get overexposed because he doesn't have tools to work with. He's a small, slow runner. He's not even really quick. He just runs hard and kind of has the ability to, you know, stand up against contact because he's like stout, but he can't actually like advance and create yardage. Can't really do much as a pass catcher. I guess he did a pretty good job pass block, or I can't remember anyway if he pass blocked decently. I just don't see a good basis for acting the way the Bills did, unless there's something we don't know. Like, unless it was something like, yeah, we're scratching Moss this week because he skipped a team meeting or something like that. But absent information like that, I'm just kind of like, I don't know what they're doing, and I'm worried that they don't know what they're doing either. So aside from Josh Allen and you know, his necessary pass catchers, I just want nothing to do with this team really for the time being.
Yeah, the run game there in Buffalo outside of Josh Allen himself is kind of a tough one to sort through, and not a whole lot, not a particularly rich vein for fantasy. On the Dolphins side, anything to see here? What are you expecting with Will Fuller and re-entering the mix for Miami?
Yeah, that's a weird offense they have going. You would have thought Malcolm Brown would have gotten 8 crap carries between the tackles, something, you know, some short yardage work. Miles Gaskin played pretty much the whole game, at least from scrimmage he did. And at once that makes sense. Like, I kind of get it, but they seem poised to almost overwork him if they keep up the usage that they did in the first week. So we'll see how that goes. I definitely like Gaskin. So the Bills, you know, they held Najee Harris to a really bad game last week, but I think that had a lot to do with Ben Roethlisberger and the offensive line. So I'm not convinced that the Bills run defense is exactly good. Like, most recently before last week's game, they were closer to bad than good. So going on the road to Miami here might not bring the best out of the Buffalo run defense. We'll see. Miami offensive line isn't exactly intimidating, but if Fuller has an instant rapport with Tua Tagovailoa, then I guess I'm pretty concerned for the Buffalo pass defense here, because Levi Wallace was getting beat last week, even though Ben Roethlisberger had a terrible box score, and that's exactly what you would have expected. I don't understand how they went into this year with him as a starter again, when I'm pretty sure they scratched him at least one game last year. And he ends up starting in week one, struggled quite a bit. Going against Will Fuller and Jaylen Waddle is something that just like can't really be allowed for Wallace. Like, he needs to have a safety over the top, or he can just get dusted by guys like that. So there's quite a few places, even with Tre'Davious White out there. Let's say Tre'Davious White takes out Will Fuller or takes out Jaylen Waddle. Devontae Parker is a big problem for whoever you have left. Even Albert Wilson. I mean, not that I'm saying look to Albert Wilson to do something this week, but him, Gesicki, there just might be something that gets a little bit loose in the Buffalo pass defense trying to deal with all those things at once. And I personally believe in Parker, Waddle, and Fuller on an individual basis. So if any of them gets a good matchup, I say we should expect them to do pretty well. It is hard to know who Tre'Davious White is going to cover, though. And it's not even that he's so shut down himself. It's that, why would you throw it at Tre'Davious White on any given play if you can go after these other corners instead?
Okay. All right. So that definitely is a factor as far. Yeah, because, you know, he's like a B+ corner, and then they're just throwing C-minus guys elsewhere. And the Dolphins don't have any C or C- receivers. So right, mismatch is going to be there. We just don't know who just yet. Let's get on over. We got Texans Browns, one of three games this weekend with a double digit point spread. The Browns 12.5 point favorite. So it seems to me, Mario, that Vegas isn't giving a ton of respect to Houston despite their dismantling of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah. So, I mean, Culley could be a pretty good coach. Sometimes one game doesn't mean anything. Sometimes it is the start of something else. And I guess not that you're going to say Culley sucks if he loses this one on the road against a team like the Browns. So many advantages in personnel, maybe in every single respect. So you're not exactly expecting him to look dignified in this setting here. But if they can, that would be pretty impressive, because it is a thankless, kind of like hopeless journey they're on, even though they did get that week one win. It's just Jaguars are a bigger mess, even more NFL Europe than the Texans. We have three or Amazing. Four NFL Europe teams, like the Falcons and the Jags, the Texans, maybe the Titans. I guess we'll see. Anyway, I don't know what I can't really expect Mark Ingram to have another good game, but apparently they're going to try to see if he can. Tyrod played really well at last week, and Brandon Cooks, of course, still very good. But it's just revenge game consideration aside, it's kind of tough to see Tyrod doing so well in this setting here. I don't think there's any basis of assuming he's anything better than safely below average. And the Cleveland defense, especially being in Cleveland, probably closer to above average. So, you know, Cooks, you still feel good about, I think, just because in most leagues you got him pretty affordably. So just because he has a tough matchup doesn't mean you're, I don't know. It's like maybe you do have an alternative that has a better matchup, but if you did instead invest at like running back or quarterback or whatever and kind of got Cooks as your cheap wide receiver three, I still think you feel good about that in this game here.
Okay, I do too. Yeah, that was an impressive opener from him. Of course, 5 catches on 7 targets for 132 yards. So really clicking along nicely there. Seems to be that clear-cut number one passing option for them. We're still waiting on Nico Collins to get rolling, but that was just his first game. I imagine he'll get it going soon enough, but I don't think this is the week where that happens. As for the Browns, you know, are you just loading up on them in DFS? I mean, you got to figure that the Browns are going to be very, very popular this week in that regard.
Yeah, if there's a concern, I guess it would just be, is the game close enough that whoever you're buying gets the snap count that you're assuming they'll get? Because if I'm the Browns, I don't really want Nick Chubb playing past the first quarter in this game. Not that they'll play it that way. They'll probably, you know, give him basically his customary workload. But if things do get out of hand, why would they give him more? Why wouldn't they make Kareem Hunt earn his contract, help keep Chubb out of the spotlight until they really need him again? But Chubb is definitely the kind of player who can, I mean, I don't want to predict that he'll do like Jamal Lewis versus the Browns. Yeah, the Browns kind of stuff. But he could do that. He could get 100 yards on 10 carries. That's not difficult for him in many settings. Maybe this is one of those. So he looks good. It's just if you're imagining a scenario where Tyrod keeps it close, if the Tyrod revenge game does happen, I guess Chubb could do, biblical stuff, because if they give him 30 carries, it could just be
that's 200 plus.
So, but yeah, I don't expect that to happen. It seems like Cleveland should take care of this pretty quickly.
Yeah, I would imagine so as well. Thoughts on the Cleveland passing game? You know, is Beckham going to be back? If he is, you know, are you going to feel okay with starting him? And what did you think of Anthony Schwartz last week?
The Beckham thing sucks. It would have been nice to have clearer warning on that. You know, it's like all offseason they were saying it looks good, and then like 3 days before the season or whatever, just being like, yeah, I don't know where he is. Don't know what that guy's doing. I'm like, huh? Really? Wow.
Awesome. Great.
So yeah, I thought they were just kind of screwing with us, but apparently they were screwing with us all offseason instead. But that's a bummer, because Beckham is just a monster when he can play. They don't need him here, though. They shouldn't let him play. If it was smart to not let him play last week, there's no way they can let him play this week, in my opinion. But Schwartz was pretty impressive. It's at once, you know, a really good sign, but also not conclusive in any way. Like, he's on a good course for sure, but especially for this year, I wouldn't go making any assumptions about his usage. Like, guy like him doesn't have many dimensions to his game. he might develop them. He might develop them pretty quickly. I mean, he's still very young. He only turned 21 like 10 days ago or something, which is very young even for an underclassman. So he's always been impressive for his experience level and his age level. He'll probably keep getting better. But in the meantime, he can only really do a couple things. And I think the Chiefs were pretty caught off guard. I would imagine they game planned more so for Donovan Peoples-Jones, Rashard Higgins, I guess. And if you go into a game looking at those guys' route combos from last year, and then you're just totally unprepared for Anthony Schwartz, the way they used him, 4-2 speed makes that a little tougher to adjust to than a lot of other players. So they caught the Chiefs by surprise. They're not going to catch anyone else by surprise. Schwartz will probably keep making promising plays, but in terms of like the yardage per snap that he showed last week, I would not get attached to that.
Okay. All right. I think that's totally fair. And like you said, the surprise element is gone. You know, there was a question all along as to whether or how much Cleveland would utilize a guy like that with the amount of speed that Schwartz has, but also kind of the general rawness that he has elsewhere to his game. Let's get on over. We got Bengals, Bears. We got the Bears checking in as 1.5 point home favorites going up against the Bears. Andy Dalton, little revenge game action potentially. We got Justin Fields getting the University of Georgia treatment that, last week, just playing him in goofy packages, not letting him really get into the flow of the game while a clearly inferior quarterback plays the majority of the snaps. So your thoughts on this matchup?
It's going to be weird. And it was weird watching the Bears against the Rams, too. It was just don't like the mustache. I guess I should start with that. Your mustache is good, John. Andy Dalton's mustache, I don't like. It looked like
he doesn't strike me as a mustache guy. That's like seeing Walter White in The Cabin late in Breaking Bad or something.
Yeah, it looks like he's just got like Gerber's on his face or something. Not good. Not good. And we don't like seeing Andy Dalton on the field, I guess. But I don't think he really embarrassed himself outside of that one play, which was that one interception was pretty brutal. Could have gotten intercepted at least twice on that play. So that wasn't good. Justin Fields seems to be picking up, traction with the team. Maybe he always had it, but David Montgomery, he had some quote to the press that almost was kind of, it seemed like he was sort of trying to use his position to put pressure on the Bears to make the switch to Fields. And we know it's going to happen eventually. Maybe, though, they just want to, keep Dalton in for his dignity's sake this one last time against his former team, and maybe that'll be it. But who knows? It's going to be weird probably for a while with this team. And outside of Allen Robinson, Mooney, David Montgomery, I don't really know what you can expect. But those, especially Robinson and Montgomery, of course, they should be busy. And I don't know what's going on with Montgomery, but he's not running the same 40 time. He's not getting the same combine numbers.
He looks good, man.
He's, I'm pretty sure, objectively a lot faster, which is a little strange. But yeah, he looked as fast as Damian Williams, who ran a 4.45 at the combine, and Montgomery had the 4.6, whatever it was. Doesn't look like he's running that anymore. So
he looks more spelt, I will say.
Yeah, he looks different, and don't see why the Bengals would be a problem for him. You would imagine this should be a setting where Montgomery could have one of the highest finishes of the week. So really difficult to see anything concerning for him here. I mean, I know that Cincinnati played pretty well against the Vikings offense, all things considered, but I don't know. I can't. Maybe I'm just being slow to recognize the Bengals as, something other than bad, but I tend to lean that way until we get a little bit clearer confirmation on it. So, I think, not surprisingly, the Ja'Marr Chase preseason panic turned out to be completely insane. Not that he's like a slam dunk, mega star just because he lit up Patrick Peterson in that one play. And then whoever else on the other side, Breland, I'm assuming, those were corners he kind of should beat. And he did. He dusted them. So really good sign. T. Higgins is still a monster on the other side. Tyler Boyd, he's going to get going eventually. So unless Khalil Mack ends things, causes problems, and him and Akeem Hicks are a problem. Akeem Hicks, and he's such a goon, but he's a very good goon. And he could be a problem here if him and Mack, of course. But if not, these corners can't cover these receivers.
Okay. All right. So that's an interesting detail there when it comes to what the Bears can do defensively. We got a viewer question here, Mario. Scary Terry or Allen Robinson in PPR this week? I think you got to go with Robinson. It's, he gets the full week. It's not a short week. No risk of a James Bradbury. And yeah, he gets the Bengals secondary. That's just preferable. I got to go Robinson there.
Yeah, it's must be a pretty good team, or at least strong receiver group you have. So it's a good problem, I suppose. I would go with Robinson for the same reasons John said. But yeah, if you for some reason feel the need to go with McLaurin, I wouldn't exactly sweat. It's just Robinson a bit more locked in.
Yeah, I think so too. We got another viewer question as well. Who would you start from this grouping? Brandon Ayuk, I'm sure we'll get to him here soon. Marvin Jones, Tyson Williams, or Kenyon Drake in full point PPR. So just needs a floor play of this group, not necessarily hunting upside. Any thoughts on this quartet of players?
Not a great group for floor.
No.
I would have to go for Tyson Williams, I guess, just because if the Ravens do stay in a run viable script, I think Williams is good enough to make a few plays, and it's hard for me to imagine him playing fewer than a, 30 snaps, something like that. Don't know what Kenyon Drake is going to do. Don't know what Ayuk is going to do. In Marvin Jones's case, I'm concerned that there's just not much optimism, or not much reason for optimism at all.
Yeah. And your reasoning there is backed up in our weekly flex rankings. You can again, check those out at rotowire.com/football/value meter. So check that out. If you're not already subscribed, please do that. Before we get on to our next game, a quick message from our sponsors.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's get on. Next game here. We've got a lot of games to get through here in the next little bit. Pats, Jets. We got Jets, 6-point home underdogs. The Patriots, I thought, looked pretty decent for the most part last week. Obviously had the killer mistakes throughout the course of that game. But even still, I thought that it was a pretty decent debut for Mac Jones. I think the Patriots are a solid team, whereas the Jets, they hung around with the Panthers team that I felt like just couldn't quite get themselves in sync and take advantage of the opportunities that the Jets were presenting them. So I like the Patriots in this setup. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought both rookie quarterbacks did well last week. Zach Wilson had the really bad looking numbers in the first half, but that Panthers defense played pretty tough, especially the pass rush, big problem. So wasn't much he could do about that. And obviously got it going in the last, 18 minutes of the game. Losing Mekhi Becton for a while is brutal because he's so good. And it was already looking difficult for Wilson against the pass rush even before then. So taking him out, going against the Belichick defense, it's pretty difficult to see what Wilson can do to defend himself realistically in this setting. So yeah, I think you got to go with the Patriots and Mac Jones. I'm not convinced Mac Jones can kind of like make plays to push this team toward the end zone, in the end zone, I should say. He can push them toward the end zone, get in field goal range. I'm not convinced that there's much more than kind of like steady check down stuff for the time being. We'll see if that's enough. In this game, I think it definitely is, though.
Okay. I tend to think so as well. One last thing I wanted to touch on, any sort of doghouse worries that you may have when it comes to these Patriots running backs. Obviously, Stevenson really might have hurt his chances at seeing the field anytime soon on Sunday, and then Damian Harris with the killer one late in the game.
Yeah, at least they both fumbled, showed solidarity with each other. Maybe
that's right.
makes it harder for Belichick to bench them. So, I don't know. Brandon Bolden could play. That guy's always been kind of a bit of a punchline in the NFL, but he's never actually done poorly as a running back, and he was a pretty good college player, pretty decent athlete. I do think Belichick is willing to use that guy, and I don't want to say he will. It's just I think he's willing to do that, take that measure. Otherwise, James White's looking pretty much on the upswing anyway, just because so many of those cam attempts, rather than going necessarily to the receivers, just went straight to James White, and he can continue playing well in that capacity, maybe even in this game. But otherwise, I think Damian, for the time being, has a real leash, and like you were kind of getting at, Stevenson, if one of them only, it's got to be Stevenson, who has the shorter leash.
Yeah, absolutely. So Stevenson really kind of that was tough on him. You know, I'm a bit of a believer, and it was kind of hoping on hope that he would be able to
walk
in some sort of goal line, but
yeah, he's talented and stuff, so
just the early season doghouse, never great.
I will say, like, he got involved, I would say be less more encouraged by how much he was involved before the fumble than the fumble itself, because either way, he's like at a point in the totem pole that's higher than, you know, certainly before the Michelle trade he was looking at.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I will take that to heart. Let's get on over. We got Broncos, Jags. Broncos 5.5-point favorites on the road against this Jaguars team that obviously looked completely out of sorts. Yeah, I like the Broncos a lot. I mean,
45 points at least, I think.
I mean, like that's what the total is right here. I mean, is it like a sucker bet to go Broncos -5.5 on the road? I mean, they looked good against the Giants, and I know that Jerry Judy's hurt, but Jaguars, man, I don't know if there's a number that like I would start to feel great about backing them.
Right. I am not like, I'm definitely not a trained bettor. I don't know what the rules of thumb are for these situations, but I think anecdotally we can kind of determine that, you know, this Jaguars team is not prepared, was not at least on Sunday prepared to be an actual NFL professional football team. They weren't prepared the way that a team in their position should have been, and the Texans were, and they obviously are pretty crap talent wise, and yet they still just lit up the Jaguars start to finish. So that's something that's not necessarily going to happen every time, but when it happens that particular way, when like the talent advantage team just gets wiped out just emphatically, and it's probably in their for that case, it's probably because they just were that unprepared. So it's like, if they can even get prepared at this point, how long will it take? Will it take like a month for Urban Meyer to figure out the reason he was running practices wrong and start doing it the right way? If he can figure it out at all. And I don't know what those answers are, but in the meantime, it would take not just them playing better than we have reason for them to believe based on last week. It would take the Broncos playing so much worse than we have reason to believe they will based on last week. And that stuff does sometimes happen. I mean, psychological psychological things like, oh, this team got ahead of themselves and started looking ahead to the game after this one, or they were so high on their unexpected week one victory that they sort of didn't pay attention to week two like they should have. That can happen, and going on the road, I guess, makes it slightly more plausible, but the Broncos losing is just like out of the question, and I don't really see how the Jaguars get within 7. I would expect that line to just keep going.
Yeah, I think so as well. So again, like I alluded to earlier, there are three games that Vegas has double-digit spreads on. Obviously, they're not going to quite give that to a Teddy Bridgewater-led Broncos team, but I feel like the Broncos are going to draw a fair amount of interest in Survivor. Before we get on to the next game, Got a message from our friends over at WinBet. There's one thing we appreciate here at RotoWire. It's making good decisions, and even more so, making the right decision. Listen up, folks. I have an incredible offer for you with RotoWire's newest partner, WinBet, the premier digital casino and sportsbook app. WinBet is the exclusive sponsor for RotoWire's fantasy football podcast and overall podcast. WinBet brings you the latest action with a user-friendly interface, moneyline bets, boosted parlays, over-unders, round robins, live betting, and so much more at your fingertips. And if you want a break from sports betting, head into WinBet's digital casino and take a spin on roulette, double down on blackjack, slam the slots, or try your hand at Baccarat. WinBet is currently available in six states. That's Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia, while rapidly expanding. At WinBet, the possibilities are limitless. WinBet is currently offering all RotoWire listeners a risk-free bet up to $500 on your first wager. Download WinBet now. That's W-Y-N-N-B-E-T. WinBet, the exclusive partner for RotoWire's fantasy podcast. We also got a message from our friends over at Fantasy Stand. Playing fantasy sports is so much fun, but once you dive deeper, fighting against other players for a percentage of the pot, there might be sharks. Even when your fantasy team crushes it, those skilled pros may leave you without a single cent. Luckily, the days of having a great score and not getting loot are over. With Fantasy Stand, you're playing against the house. If you reach the threshold, you win. It's that simple. Sorry, baby sharks. To participate, choose a free or paid contest entry in the lobby. For your salary cap, you have to pick nine players while staying under the salary cap. For Pick'em, you simply pick one player from each tier they are presented with. Done. Now sit back and watch the results to see if your fantasy team has what it takes to stand out from the rest. And if you come out as a high scorer, get ready for additional prizes. So where do you stand? Visit fantasystand.com to sign up today. And we got another message from our friends over at Vivid Seats. Preseason football has wrapped up, and we're ready for the regular season to kick off this week. Live events are making a comeback, and there's no better place to be than Vivid Seats to get back into the action. So grab your NFL tickets and cheer on your favorite team from the stands. Man, that feels great to say. Even better, they just launched a new and improved rewards program with free tickets for every fan. Earn rewards, ticket upgrades, and perks just for shopping. If you're looking for tickets for the game, your favorite artist, or that new show everyone is talking about, Vivid Seats has it all. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. All right, Mario, on to the next game. We got Niners-Eagles. A couple of interesting teams here. A couple of the Niners really, they let the Lions back into that game. We had been talking about it basically all offseason in the sense that the Lions – they're not going to quit. Dan Campbell's guys are going to give you a 60-minute game. And by George, they gave him a 60-minute game there in Detroit last week. So the Niners won't have that necessarily to overlook this time around, going up against an Eagles team that I thought looked really, really impressive. Obviously, I live in Atlanta now, so that was on the main TV feed. Here, watching Atlanta just get completely smoked by the Eagles and Jalen Hurts. So not totally sure what to take away from that. Is it a Jalen Hurts being good? Is it Devontae Smith being good? Or is it just the Falcons and their offensive line and everything else just looking as shaky as we possibly could have imagined?
I couldn't have imagined how bad the Falcons were in that game, so I don't know what to make of that exactly. Like, we knew they didn't have much talent, but even the talent that they definitely have wasn't materializing on the field. So I can't really give the Eagles more credit than just kind of like checking the box. You know, they won on the road, and that's not necessarily ever easy, but it was about as easy as it ever possibly could have been in NFL road game history. So we'll see. I thought that Jalen Hurts made a couple of good plays, and he doesn't need to be specifically, you know, good as a passer, especially in real life, to be good in fantasy with the kind of rushing impact he can make. But he made some good throws. Some of the yardage as a passer was just kind of screen stuff that, you know, that'll always be there to some extent. But I wouldn't expect good defenses to let them catch that by surprise. And eventually defenses will sit on that a bit more. And then at that point, Hurst will have to make a different kind of play. Maybe he can make it. I don't know what I expect exactly. I'm a little concerned, but he looked good last week, and Devontae Smith, you know,
man, he looks good.
Yeah, one game doesn't make everything, but he sure does look convincing. So he seems like the real deal. And even like Rager having that game was kind of weird. I don't really like what they're trying to do, making him like an underneath player, but it worked pretty well in that game. He caught every target. So if he's going a little bit, Devontae Smith's going a little bit, those tight ends, of course, will hold some presence. Kenny Gainwell can do more as a pass catcher than they like. I can't believe that. I just thought Boston Scott was like a pretty good player, definitely not great or anything. And I like Kenny Gainwell as a prospect. Like, I thought he was better than Michael Carter, and he probably should have been more like a third rounder to me. So I really liked him in the fifth round. But all that much more impressive that he can push aside a player like Scott, especially if, you know, if Scott is any good. Because rookies don't get that benefit of the doubt, and when they earn that place, it usually means, you know, they're making it really tough for the coach to keep them off the field.
Yeah, absolutely. So that they clearly want to get him involved. I mean, that he scored a touchdown right on a goal line attempt. So I mean, that's definitely kind of a big statement there when it comes to Gainwell. If you went ahead and scooped him in best ball or anything, you're definitely feeling better about your running back depth, knowing what Gainwell was able to do in week one. And flipping over to the other side, I don't know if there's a team that's more at the center of fantasy discourse right now than the 49ers. I mean, you see Trey Lance go out and you know, have a touchdown early in his debut. So basically just gets the touchdown play called for him instead of Jimmy G. And then we had, you know, we obviously talked about Zach Moss earlier, but maybe even the bigger surprise on Sunday, if there was one in terms of inactives, it would be Trey Sermon just riding the pine on Sunday. And then, of course, Raheem Mostert suffers an injury that will ultimately keep him out for the entire season. Elijah Mitchell looked really good. He's got a lot of speed. So there's kind of analogous things that he's able to do that, to where they don't have to change that Mostert role there in San Francisco. So unpack what you're thinking when it comes to this 49ers offense right now.
Well, this Eagles run defense might be pretty good, but it's mostly, if so, it's all in the defensive line. And as long as the 49ers can control the defensive line, not let it wreck them, then Shanahan, even though he's really pissing us off lately, still probably will be good at setting up his running backs to put, you know, production from scrimmage up on the field, even though we'll be, you know, just thinking about how we'd like to choke him the whole time. It'll eventually get harder over the course of the game because, yeah, Elijah Mitchell will probably get a good look here or there. It's really tough to defend Shanahan's schemes in the run game, especially when you have Kittle threatening off tackle from a variety of different kinds of threats. So it's not like teams didn't know what Mostert was going to do the past 2 years or whatever when he kept going out there. And it's like, isn't that just the same play they're running every single time? Why does it keep working? Why is there always this room for him to run? Why is it always this scenario where he just has to be fast in a straight line? And it just keeps happening over and over. And it's because Shanahan makes it happen. And I think that, yeah, Elijah Mitchell is so much a carbon copy in terms of physical tools to Raheem Mostert. Like, I don't know what Mostert's 40 time was when he was at kind of like peak speed, because he was a track guy and he might have like a kind of fast that doesn't really show up in the 40. I don't really know. But Elijah Mitchell is definitely fast. He was like, it's 4.35 or whatever. Lost some weight to run it. And apparently he tried to add another like 5 or 10 pounds back after running the 40. So maybe he's slowed down a little bit in light of that, but he's probably running at worst like a 4.42, around 208, 210, something like that. So he's the only guy on that roster who can run those concepts that they use with Mostert. And maybe they won't run those concepts. Maybe Shanahan will decide to go with whatever it is that he thinks Jamichael Hasty is going to do. Eventually, I think we can expect Jeff Wilson to take a pretty substantial role in this backfield in November or whenever he's back. But in the meantime,
it's 2 months of Mitchell, baby. That's pretty good.
And I don't think he's going to go over like 15 carries like ever or very much, if so. But that sort of explosiveness we started to take for granted with Mostert, there might be reason to take it for granted with Elijah Mitchell too. Like, he was a really good player in college and he's fast.
Yeah. So and this scheme, I think, seems to just get production from whoever's out there. And I think that Mitchell is more than just a guy. So that this is pretty interesting. I dumped almost 70% of my free agent budget on him in an NFFC league. So we'll see how this goes. I got my fingers crossed that it's going to work out. We have a bunch of questions pouring in, Mario. So let's get to these quickly. Our buddy Rendon wants to know, offer to trade he would be getting, or he would be giving Melvin Gordon for Courtland Sutton. Your thoughts? I think I'm holding on to Gordon.
Yeah, the only way I'd consider that is if Gordon is a bench player and Sutton would be a starter for you. But I would see if, especially after this week, I would wait at least because Gordon might be in a really good spot to produce again here against the lowly Jags.
Yes, yeah, I think so as well. All right, Disco Dave wants to know, PPR, non-PPR, Juju or I presume Elijah Mitchell. I think it's Mitchell.
Yeah, I would go with Mitchell.
Okay. I think so as well. Our buddy Heck wants to know, Najee Harris and CeeDee Lamb for Derrick Henry. Should he accept that one?
Offered. Man, that's a tough one because those are two good players. I really feel bad for Harris. He had no chance in that game last week, and Henry didn't have much better, but I don't know. I think I got to stick with Derrick Henry just because I think we have reason to believe he'll correct course. Whereas with Harris, that offensive line is just so brutal. It might not get much better. So it might end up being kind of like you get offered CeeDee Lamb, a third round pick value for a guy who went in the second, Najee Harris, but ends up being more like a fifth rounder.
Yeah. It's a tough start when it came to Najee that this past week. Let's get on over. We got Rams, Colts. Rams obviously looked impressive in the first game of the Matthew Stafford era out there. Colts, a little bit less impressive when it came to the start of the Carson Wentz era. Your read on this game?
Yeah, Colts looked brutal. I don't think Frank Reich is the man for this job. Although they just extended Ballard, he's basically a charlatan. He's almost a crook with how badly he's running that team and getting that extension. It's unreal. Their offensive line is in a lot of trouble. It had trouble in that first game, and I don't know what there might have been an update by now, but they're really good guard. I think he's a guard. If not a guard, he would be right tackle, but I can't remember. Braden Smith, the guy from Auburn, he's been really, really good, and he's hurt. I don't know what the latest is on him. In any case, the Colts kind of just don't look very good, and the Rams look very much great. And the way Stafford was lighting up the Bears is, you know, downfield especially, is how Russell Wilson lit up the Colts last week. So if Stafford's throwing the ball deep like he was in his first game with the Rams, he should be able to kind of just throw over these otherwise challenging zone coverages that the Colts use underneath and in the intermediate. Just make those guys run and make them run the field and see if they can keep up with all those routes that the Rams have to work with Stafford's ability to strike so many parts of the field. So you would think this Colts defense at least shows some more dignified play in the front seven. Like it's hard to see a guy like DeForest Buckner staying invisible. It's hard to see Darius Leonard staying invisible. Kenny Moore has a way of making big plays, but in the meantime, the Colts just don't, they seem overmatched and not particularly well managed to me.
Yep, I don't think so either. So that obviously spells trouble for them on the defensive side of the ball. And then when it comes to Indianapolis's offense, what are you looking for specifically when it comes to this passing game?
Not much. I don't think it's going to do a whole lot. And whatever it does is probably going to be through the running backs again. I mean, Carson Wentz just sucks, and the offensive line is not very good either. So then they're also not using their best players. Like starting Zach Pascal and Michael Pittman over Paris Campbell is comical. Like you want to play red zone offense the whole field with this group of players? Good luck, man. You're going to need it and a lot more than that. So I like Jonathan Taylor's chances of, you know, breaking a long run. And I think he's going to keep getting check down targets because I don't think Wentz can throw downfield. I don't know if he even means to try anymore. None of those receivers were getting much going, and I don't think it's because of them. It might be because of the offensive line more than Wentz, but it's hard to see everything that needs to improve in time for this game.
Yeah, so this is a tough spot. Indianapolis 3.5-point home underdogs going up against the Rams there. Let's get on over to a classic AFC matchup. We got the Raiders going up against the Steelers. Raiders obviously coming off of a huge week one win and overtime victory Monday night. The Steelers, have a little bit of, 24 plus hours advantage as far as getting rested up and ready for this one. They're going to be at home, so that's definitely important as well. Steelers 5.5-point favorites in this one. Is there anything you think we can glean from that Monday night performance from the Raiders that, that might actually, you know, help them carry things over into this matchup Sunday?
Well, it was a really ugly game, and I think the Ravens kind of blew it more than the Raiders won it, but their pass rush is definitely, at least on the edges, it's a problem.
Crosby's crazy.
Right, and Ngakoue is really good too, so, I mean, Crosby was already good, first of all, and I don't know if his, you know, getting kind of sobered up brought maybe another level out of him. Like, I feel like that happened with Jared Allen. Like, he was always good, and then he got sober and got even better, turned into like a 20 sack player. So Crosby could be like a big time problem because he was already good, and he's like fast and stuff too. Like, I know he was a small school guy, but he's really productive, really athletic. Locked in, Ngakoue is going to be bringing the other tackle, collapsing the pocket from that angle. So this Pittsburgh offensive line is still really bad. Like, I know they won that game last week, but the Bills kind of just blew it. The Pittsburgh defense kind of carried them. The offensive line looked brutal. If they managed to neutralize Ngakoue and Crosby at the same time, that would be pretty impressive, and I don't really expect it exactly.
Yeah, but I don't either. So, yeah, this pass rush could be a problem. However, maybe the – I don't know how you defend the offense that the Raiders were running, in the sense where they're not afraid to throw it to Waller 20 times. And then if they do start looking elsewhere, you know, Bryan Edwards started to catch fire late in the game. Henry Ruggs made a big play when you know, when they drew a mismatch that favored him with Brandon Stevens going on to him. So, I mean, this is I don't think it's like the best offense in the league by any means. And of course, you still have the Derek Carr factor, but man, Waller just kind of changes everything.
Waller's crazy. Carr looked really brutal for most of that game, so I'm not really optimistic about him versus this Pittsburgh pass rush. Like, the Vegas offensive line didn't hold up that great against the Ravens. It's hard to tell how much that's them and how much it might have been the Ravens just playing well. But you have reason to expect the Steelers front seven to play pretty well. Don't know what the latest is with Tuitt. I saw that he was out last week. I don't know if he's going to keep being out. But if Tuitt keeps missing time, there is a way maybe to hurt the Steelers on the interior a bit more than most other years. Normally they have Hayward and Tuitt out there at the same time, and that's really tough to run against. But I don't know if the backup is anywhere near as good as Tuitt, who is very good, although he gets hurt quite a bit. So maybe the Raiders can get a little bit going in the run game to leverage, you know, Waller that much more off the play action or whatever. But in the meantime, yeah, I guess they're content to just keep throwing at him. Waller versus Fitzpatrick is going to be pretty interesting. That's probably one of those where it's like they're both going to win some, lose some. And when you're talking the kind of volume that Waller plays with, I mean, anything could happen, but it's really hard to imagine a scenario right now where Waller isn't just heavily, heavily involved.
Yeah, so he's definitely going to...
Oh, did you notice that Hunter Renfro has like a Vlade Divac thing going now? Like, his whole thing now is he goes... the team sent a complaint to the league, like, the Ravens kept decking Hunter Renfro on his routes, and they're hurting Hunter Renfro. And it's like, you look at it, it's like guys kind of like the Ravens just like checking him while he's crossing his routes, and he just goes like,
yeah, it's not head over heels. Like, the guy is like 5'10", like 100. So he's just like,
he just goes cartwheeling backward. Yeah. And I don't know. I think they're really trying to get like flags out of it, and it might work because the refs have a way of paying attention to stuff when they, you know, get it in their heads that it's like going on and they need to keep watching it. It kind of becomes a self-fulfilling thing. We'll see plays. We'll see if it works on the road here.
Yeah, we will.
The Steelers are dirty as hell too. They're going to knock them out.
Yeah, because it's just such a tough thing to do to knock down a guy of Hunter Renfro's carriage. All right, we got 10 minutes to go here. We got a bunch of games to run through. So let's do that. Saints, Panthers, biggest fantasy storyline from this one.
Saints are well coached, but I still don't think they have any talent. Don't know how well the Panthers are coached truly, but I got to side with them just because I think they have some actual players on offense, and I don't know if the Saints do aside from Kamara.
Dang. Okay. I mean, the Saints really just blew the Packers out of the water last week. So I have I'm going to have trouble getting that one out of my brain for at least.
Packers
a
just
bit.
Didn't show up too. I mean, not to take all the credit. Sean Payton is a great coach, and he had them ready to go, but the Packers just blew it. And
they were simply not present there on Sunday. Let's go Vikings Cardinals. We got the Cardinals very, very impressive in their week one victory over the Titans. Vikings, there was just kind of like a mediocre team that would find a way to lose to the Bengals. It's probably the Vikings. So that, of course, that they managed to pull that one off. I think there's going to be a lot of money on the Cardinals covering this one, because I think this is pretty much a similar disregard. But Cardinals, I feel like they're going to be, the public's all over them, given what the Vikings did last week and then also what the Cardinals did in Tennessee.
Yeah, I guess some bigger money is coming in on the Vikings, because the spread down to 3.5 from 4.5 with 72% of people betting on the Cardinals, apparently. So we'll see how that goes for Mr. Moneybags here. Usually, wins, but I wouldn't make that bet just because Mike Zimmer openly dislikes his quarterback. He's kind of sick of this team. I think he thinks he's on the way out, and he doesn't really see the point in leaving any bridges behind. So, I don't know if we can take it for a given that the Vikings just come out and, you know, play so hard that they make an overachievement here. The Cardinals have a lot better personnel, and that the way that defense won in week one, I mean, they can also be a problem for Kirk Cousins. If anything, Ryan Tannehill and those receivers should have been able to throw over the middle part of the field where the Cardinals are just this fast amoeba. Kirk Cousins kind of needs to live in that part of the field.
Yep. So that's going to be a problem for Minnesota in that passing game on Sunday. Bucks, Falcons. Bucks, 12-point favorites at home in this one against a Falcons team that looked pretty lifeless in its home opener a week ago. I think the Bucks completely roll them in this one. I don't think there's even like a fading of the public leverage thing that you should really do here. I think you're either betting the Bucks in this one, or you're just leaving it alone.
Yeah, it might take like point shaving by the Buccaneers to let the Falcons get within 40 of them. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I just think even if you took like the whole Tom Brady and everyone in that passing game out of what you're starting the analysis with, just the Bucs front against the Falcons offensive line.
Bourbon Bowl would win it for sure.
I mean, Matt Ryan, This could be really, really tough for him the entire season long. So, love the Bucs in this spot. Titans, Seahawks 5.5-point favorites at home in this one. It feels like I could see this one being a little bit higher than that one, given how bad the Titans were a week ago, and now they're going to be on the road in a pretty tough Seattle environment. So, big fantasy storylines here.
It's not a great setup for Derrick Henry. He's a monster, obviously, but the Seahawks run defense is pretty good. It tends to play up when they're at home. Tennessee is a mess. Mike Vrabel is going to lose that team soon. Maybe he can kind of get another high effort showing out of them. Maybe they can fix something about their passing game. I just don't understand how they let it get that bad in the first place. So I'm concerned, but the Seahawks corners cannot cover these guys. If they can't get a big game from Tannehill here, they are beyond toast.
Yeah, I think so as well. So, and then the script should set up for the passing game here, and we'll see what happens. Maybe the Seahawks can counter and just blitz Jamal Adams 100,000 times and take down Tannehill that way. All right, Chargers, Cowboys. We have the Chargers 3-point favorites at home. Cowboys coming off the long layoff, of course. Another road game for them in this one. Your thoughts?
So I was concerned about the Chargers not getting enough speed on the field, especially at receiver. But a couple things were promising in week one that I didn't anticipate. One was that Mike Williams, instead of just being a downfield specialist, got quite a bit going underneath and in the intermediate. So I'm not convinced he's going to keep being good at it. But if he does that, that helps lessen the slack on Keenan Allen in the middle of the field, Austin Eckler, wherever he's running around at. So that's good. And Jalen Guyton played ahead of Josh Palmer, and Jalen Guyton crucially drew more targets per snap than he did last year. So Guyton's fast. That's speed right there. As long as he's out there, Keenan Allen is an automatic, of course, where he runs. this should be a pretty good offense with those guys that they keep playing like they did in week one. And Herbert was awesome. Like, he played a lot better than his box score made it look.
Yeah, I thought so as well. So I like what the Chargers have cooking. That was definitely encouraging going on the road to a tough defense like that and escaping with the victory. I think they'll have a much easier time moving the ball this time around against this Cowboys defense. Ravens Chiefs. I think the Ravens are going to get completely destroyed in this one. Again, I have
that's obviously fair.
Psychic damage, but I had a bad feeling about that Raiders game too. So yeah, I think the Chiefs are just going to go in. I don't think that the Ravens can hang. Whether it's the fact that they're too banged up or the Chiefs have their number, I don't know. There's just so many ways in which I just feel like the 0% chance the Ravens come out of this one on top.
Yeah, I hear you. I don't blame you for that at all. I would agree that the Chiefs probably should be favored by more than 3.5 after it opened at 2.5. I think Villanueva might get
a little terrible. He's an absolute turnstile.
Yeah, I don't know how much of that is owed to switching sides after playing left tackle. I guess we'll see. But Lamar missed a couple plays. A couple other things were going wrong. There was a lot of just stuff going wrong with the Ravens. All of it their fault. But in any case, even if they were sharp, would of course project as kind of like disadvantaged here. So I still think Greg Roman kind of sucks too. I'm not letting him off the hook, but Lamar does need to play a little better. And there was this one play in particular. I'm pretty positive he had Duvernay open for a post touchdown on the right side. And maybe he started abandoning it because he was afraid Villanueva was going to let the rush in again. But that was the play where he like got Marquise Brown kind of like trash compacted in the middle of the field when he made that one arm catch. Like Duvernay was wide open and he didn't see it. So he can't be letting stuff like that happen. Maybe he fixes it, but they got a lot of work to do for an opponent like this.
Yeah. And the Chiefs, that offense, I mean, just unbelievable. So yeah, this just does not set up well for Baltimore. And last one here, Mario, before we sign off real quick, Lions, Packers 11-point favorites. That seems like a lot of respect for the Packers given what happened last week.
They almost have to come out a lot better. Like, I mean, they will come out better. And I mean to say maybe even in line with their kind of like 2020 standard, but maybe not. And I think in either case, whatever way, it's like you're putting the Lions down too much to give Green Bay 11 points, even if it is at home. So we'll see. Jamal Williams had probably the best game of his career. Credit to him. I'm a little skeptical that it continues. I definitely can see why Swift and Hawkinson would keep producing the way they have. And Cephas had a quiet 7 targets or something that didn't land very well, but I kind of like him to get going as a steady presence too.
Okay. Yeah. So some interesting stuff to look out for, even though the big spread, I think that Monday night game might end up being pretty fun with it being a divisional matchup. But anywho, that's going to do it for this edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast brought to you by our friends over at WinBet. Check out tomorrow's episode. Scott Jenstead and Andrew Laird talking some DFS from Mario Puig. I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.